Night City. Scousers Abroad.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Scousers Abroad. Let's go to Turkey, and it's the first time I've been. Hello, George.
How are you doing, Pete?
I'm delighted. Right, describe whereabouts you are in Turkey.
Well, we live on what's known as the Turquoise Coast. We're in a place called Çalış Beach. Now, if anybody knows Turkey, it's not too far from Oludeniz. A lot of people go on holiday at Oludeniz. So we're just 20 minutes down the coast from Oludeniz.
How long have you been out there?
We never intended, as I said, to come. It was always going to be a holiday home. And we retired in the UK, in fact, both of us, about 5 years ago. And we sort of never really understood the impact that the weather has on your retirement day. You know, when you're working, it doesn't matter. If it's pouring down with rain, it pours down with rain. And we'd make plans every day to go out somewhere. And, of course, the weather would be dreadful. And we'd put those plans off. And we'd end up doing the inevitable. We'd watch daytime TV. Now, I don't know if you've ever watched daytime TV, Peter.
Nope.
But it's mind-numbing. It really was mind-numbing. And we just both made the decision, look, we ain't going to spend our retirement sitting in front of the telly. You know, and there's only so many times you can go to the Great Liverpool Museum. So we thought what we'll do is we'll pack our bags. We'll come and do a year in the holiday home in Turkey, see if we like it. And if we didn't like it, you know, we've never been here over the winter. For instance, so we thought, let's stick it out. If we love it, we'll stay. If we hate it, we'll still stay for the year. So at least we know what it's like. And that was, as I say, nearly 5 years ago. We've been here ever since.
Did you keep a base over here or not?
Yeah, we did. We had a house that our son now lives in. He grew up all of his life there. So we had a base to go back to. What we've done now, Pete, is we basically signed the house over and to our son and his new wife. He wants to have some certainty in his life, if you like. But we still have an agreement with him that should either one of us or both of us want to go back to the UK, we have a place to stay for as long as we wish, if that be it, the rest of our lives.
That sounds like a plan, that, George. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, if I'm honest, Peter, you know, having a house as a, you know, in the UK when you're not living there, it can be a bit of a liability in years to come. So that was also in our mind. We didn't want to have something that might be a bit of a millstone around our neck as well, you know.
Tell me, going back to the holiday home, why Turkey when there's everywhere, somewhere even nearer like Spain? Why Turkey?
Well, it's a great question, that, because what happened, the reason we got to Turkey, I was sort of dragged here kicking and screaming, never ever wanted to come to the place. We about 17 or 18 years ago, we'd taken our son on holiday to America, and we said, you can bring a friend with you. Now, the following year, our son's friend said that they would take our son away. So that left Chris, my wife, and I facing a holiday by ourselves. And I'd been in a job which I was lucky enough to travel a little bit with. So we'd been around, you know, so we made a list, and we said, let's go somewhere we've never been in our lives before. We made this list, took it to a travel agent, and she looked down at the list and she went, you've not been to Turkey. Now, apparently this reaction is not untypical, Peter. I said, oh, no, I don't want to go there. And I just had these visions of it being unfriendly, people scowling at you, you know, wanting to kill you as you went to the shop, and the food giving you, you know, real bad stomachs. And I don't know why I had this vision in my mind. And she showed me this picture of Oludeniz, and she said, I've just been there. Where do you think that is? And I said, oh, it looks a little bit like the Caribbean. She went, no, it's Turkey. I've just been. I said, take my word. It's great. So we went on holiday. We got there, and we absolutely, absolutely fell in love with the place, the people, the food, of course, the climate. And I was a real late starter in going abroad. I was about 25 when I went to Ibiza with Chris. And I remember like it was yesterday, we went on this boat trip, and as the boat pulled out the harbour, the holiday rep pointed to this pink cottage on top of a cliff, and she went, that's Rod Stewart's holiday home. Now, coming from the Dingle, it sort of hit me as like a bolt out the blue that, you know, people actually had holiday homes in these beautiful places. And ever since that day, we always wanted to have our place in the sun, so to speak. But, you know, to answer your question, why not Spain, why not Portugal? when we were looking around, you know, to get somewhere decent, you were talking about £150,000, £160,000, £200,000 if you wanted to be on the edge of a golf course in those days. And so even though friends and relatives had offered to come and be part owners with us, we didn't want that. And there we were sitting in Turkey, and I'm in the market this day, and this woman came up, probably recognised I was English from me brown sandals and me black ankle socks, and said, "Oh, it's an English newspaper." And I'm reading through this newspaper, and I get to the property section, and this advert, and I remember the advert, this was like, you know, years and years ago, said, for sale, a two-bedroom luxury sea view apartment, fully furnished, ready to move in, £28,000. And I went to Chris, I went, you know what, if that was true, I'd buy two of them. It must be a typo, it must be a mistake. And then the next advert was villa for sale, £30,000, so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, this dream we had of one day we'd have a place in the sun, it was affordable. So we came back, that was in the August we were out there, all those years ago. We came back in the November after doing loads of work on the internet, and lo and behold, we bought this house that I'm standing in now and talking to you from.
Of course, I'm talking to George in Turkey. I've got to ask, George, what's life like living in a Muslim culture?
Do you know, Peter, it was one of my big concerns before we came over here permanently. I really thought that we're going to get people criticising us about religion or treating second-class citizens about religion, but it just doesn't happen. The only people that talk about religion to us are the Jehovah's Witnesses who knock on our door each week.
No!
I can't. Honestly, Jehovah's Witnesses in a country that's 98% Muslim, they knock on our door. They've even found out what my name is. They go, "Hello, George," you know, and I have to talk to them for ages, and they give me a leaflet to read, which I do out of respect for them. But they're the only guys that seem to talk about religion. Just around the corner from me here, there's a church, and we have a Christian group congregate there every Sunday. They sing their hymns. We can hear them when we're sat on our balcony having breakfast, singing their Sunday morning hymns. Nobody bothers with them. There's no particular problem. So from that side of things, everything's really good. Bureaucracy here is a bit of a problem, if I'm honest with you. You know, they tend to make new laws here about three or four times a month. Now, it might not sound like a big deal, but look at the UK. We don't do this very often in the UK. If you look at the bedroom tax, look at the chaos that caused. Well, imagine making a law that's like that three or four times a month here. They just, for instance, they said, look, if you're living in Turkey now, like the rest of Europe, if you're going to drive a car and you've been here for more than 6 months, you need a Turkish driving license. No problem with that, we thought. You just go. We don't have to take a test. Fill a few forms in. Pay the inevitable administration cost. You've got the new license. But here in Turkey, one of the criteria is that you have to be able to read to have a driving license, because, of course, you need to read road signs, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way that they convince themselves that you're able to read, when you leave secondary school, you get a certificate to say you've completed secondary school. Now, of course, if Turkish people have to do that, they want us Brits to do it as well. Well, you tell me, Pete, where the hell do you go to get a certificate from a school that you probably finished 40 years ago to say, I completed secondary school, you know? So the bureaucracy, it does wind you up a little bit. But, you know, we also have to remember this modern Turkey, it's a new and evolving country. It was only established in 1923, although ancient Turkey goes back tens of thousands a year. Years. This is still a very young and evolving country. But there are obviously cultural differences between, you know, us Westerners here and the indigenous Turkish population.
George, are you conscious of politics, as in Syria and what's going on? Are we getting a different picture in this country of the borders and what's happening?
We are conscious of the politics, but we're probably more conscious of the feed that you guys get in the UK, if I'm honest, Pete. You know, let's cut to the chase here. We've had a couple of very serious bombs go off, one in Istanbul, one in Ankara, and it killed people. Now, possibly unlike other parts of the world, what that has done is it's decimated the tourist industry here. And, you know, we see the effects that has on ordinary, everyday people's lives here, those people who work and depend on the tourism industry. You know, we've all sorts of dreadful stories about suicides, people who can't cope, because the tourist business here has been, has dropped by as much as 50% in some resorts. That's just an enormous, enormous figure. But the reason people aren't coming here also confuses people like myself. You know, when we talk about Syria, Pete, is further away. Where you're standing now in Liverpool, Syria is much further away than Berlin is from where you are. It's a big, big country, this. If you look at where I live, to Ankara, that's about the same distance from John O'Groats to Land's End. So it's a massive country. And down on the southwest coast, on the Mediterranean coast, where we live, where most of the tourist resorts are, there has not been an incident in 50 years down here, a terrorist incident. Nobody's been killed. Nobody's been murdered or anything like that. But we then see the Daily Mail and the Daily Express and the newspapers like that saying, recent troubles in Turkey, the SAS are on standby to pull everybody out. And these really, really sensation-seeking headlines, which actually bear no relationship to the truth, if I'm honest with you.
Makes me really angry, that, because Egypt, Turkey, Tunisia rely on tourism, and I think it's quite cruel.
Yeah, you know, Pete, one of the stories we heard, and it was absolutely so tragic, there's a guy further up the coast, they had a car rental business, and he took on a fleet of new cars. Now, this nation, I'll maybe tell you about later, is the cultural differences, but one of them is pride. It's a tremendously proud nation, and if you fail, your family here, people can't cope. This guy couldn't pay for his fleet of new cars. He killed his two children, Pete. He killed his wife, and he killed himself. And that's the real face that we see here, of people saying, well, I'm listening to the Daily Express, and I'm listening to the other newspapers, the Daily Mail, etc., that put these ridiculous headlines on their front pages. That's the real outcome of what those headlines bring you to.
Are there many expats living out there?
Countrywide, about 30,000. If you go throughout Turkey, where we live in the down here, and I think in our region, and be about 2,000, I think, down here. So we've got a fair expat community around here, but not so many that the expats are sort of taking over the place, you know.
Now, is it cheap still?
Well, I think it is. I think it is. Living here, you know, people say, oh, things have increased in price. But of course, I bet in Liverpool in the last 5 years, things have increased in price as well.
Yeah.
You know, I always use my council tax as a great example. I pay £47 a year, my council tax. Now, my bins get empty. We don't have individual bins here. So at the end of each road, there's a little bin shed. There's a big steel bin in there. They get emptied every night of the week. So we don't have to worry about fortnightly collections or monthly collections that I've heard talk of now. They get emptied every night of the week. If your house went on fire, you'd call a fire brigade. They'd be here in a second. The police would be here in a second. The streets get brushed. The gardens, the communal gardens out on the roads get watered every night. All the streetlights work. And we pay £47 a year. And I'm thinking, how can it be possible? How can we pay that when we were paying, £180 a month or something when we were in Liverpool? And the way they do it, I think, is brilliant. It's brilliant the way they do it. They don't send anybody a bill. They just work on the basis that you know you've got to pay it.
Yeah.
And if you don't pay it, nobody gets a reminder. And if you don't pay it at all, nobody gets taken to court. Because if you ever want to sell your property, or if you have a renter, if you're a landlord and have a renter, and that renter moves out and then you put another renter in, you've got to pay all the bills on the property. So they don't have an absolute army of people in town halls chasing council tax, issuing reminders, issuing second reminders, taking people to court, paying for lawyers. Don't do any of that. And consequently, we pay £47 a year.
Are you accepted? Do they like the British?
Very much so. And, you know, I think the reason, again, that we are accepted, and all foreigners, not just the British, are accepted, is that the criteria people live in here, you have to show, first of all, if you come on holiday, you buy a tourist visa. That allows you to be in the country for 90 in any 180 days. So that's your holiday visa, basically. If you want to be a resident here, you have to get a resident visa. And there's a criteria for that. And it's brilliant, I think, that what they do is they say, first of all, you need a place to live. Now, you either have to show a set of beads, they call it a tapu here, to show that you have a place to live. Without that, you can't have a residency. You have to show that you've got enough money to support yourself. And the way they do that, they say if you've got in as much monthly income as the minimum wage here, and the minimum wage is currently 1,300 lira, about 350 Great British pounds each month. Mm-hmm. If you can prove that either by a bank statement, you've got that money in the bank, or you've got a pension statement, you've got that money coming in, great, you can have a residency. You've also got to have health insurance. There's two types you can get that. You can either go in the government scheme, which is just like our NHS, you pay each month for that, or you buy private health insurance. And most importantly, you can't work. If you work here without a permit, you're on the next plane back the next day. And it really is as quick as that. There's no appeals. You broke the law. You shouldn't be working. You know you shouldn't be working. You're out, and then they ban you for 6 months or 12 months or something like that. And there's no social security here. If you need to go, you know, I don't know, for any reason, can't afford to pay your rent or whatever, tough luck, Buster, you know, you can't do that. So what that leads to is every foreigner here is a net contributor to the economy. Nobody's a drain on the state. Nobody's taking from the economy. Everybody, every foreigner is contributing. So there's no tension between foreigners, because foreigners here are a good thing.
Do you think we could learn from it, looking back, George?
Well, I do in a way, because I see the tensions, and I've, you know, followed the Brexit situation quite closely here, and I see the tensions and I understand the frustrations that people see from migration into the UK, and we don't get that here, and foreigners, like I say, are welcome here. So I'm sure maybe it wouldn't work exactly as I've described, Pete, but maybe there's a lesson in there somewhere for everybody.
Tell me, what happened, talking about politics again, the recent military coup, what happened about that?
It was quite strange, because we watched it on TV. Someone sent us a text message, put Sky News on. And there we saw this military coup taking place. And, you know, I thought, my God, what's going on here? But the people will be out in the streets. We went out and looked up and down our road. And we basically followed it on TV. And in the end, the president, who was on holiday in Marmaris, would you believe, took to social media, which he hates, but he used social media. He told all the people, if you want this to happen, stay in your houses. If you want democracy to continue in Turkey, go out on the streets. And everybody went out on the streets, and they put a stop to it. So it was really stopped in its tracks, the military coup. And as I say, we really didn't see any difference happening. Soon after the coup, they've introduced a state of emergency. So again, we're all a bit nervous. What does this mean to us? You know, how will this affect us? And basically, the British Embassy here said, look, during the state of emergency, carry your passport, carry your visa to show that you're legally resident here. That's all you need to do. So on our day-to-day lives, it's had very little effect, apart from carrying your passport and ID with you every day.
George, you're a fascinating man. We're talking to George in Turkey. I've got to ask you a couple more questions before we go. Healthcare and dental care, what's that all about over there?
Well, you know, when you come to live in a place, of course, and, you know, most of the people are getting towards retirement here, as I am myself, and it becomes a major, major concern. Our first, you know, what shall I call it? Our first brush with that those services was the dental service, and they're absolutely brilliant. When we lived in Halewood, I fell over as a kid and smashed all my teeth out and broke my jaw and had dentures most of my life. Mm-hmm. And my one wish was to get rid of one of these sets of dentures, but I didn't have the bone density, according to my UK dentist, to support implants, etc.
Right.
I went to see this dentist and she said, look, you know, you can't be done. You're stuck with those dentures for the rest of your life. And if it could be done, you couldn't afford it, she told me, which I thought was a great statement to make. So I went to a dentist here and he examined me. He said, yeah, I can do that for you. And the implants went ahead and he got a periodontal surgeon to come and assist him when he did the implants. And, you know, I've got a Hollywood set of teeth now. It's brilliant. I went to the doctor's. I had a swelling in my knee a couple of weeks ago. And you probably won't believe this because my son-in-law, who's a paramedic, doesn't believe this happened, but I swear it did. I walked into the doctor's with a swelled knee at 10 o'clock in the morning, and he saw me straight away. No appointment. He saw me straight away. I was in the surgery for about an hour where he conducted blood tests, checking for gout, this, that, and the other. And he said, George, I'm worried you might have a blood clot. He said, have you been on a plane recently? And last year, we took our dream trip. We went all around the world. And so we'd been on planes nonstop for about 7 weeks. So he said, you really need to go to the hospital for a Doppler scan. I said, okay, which hospital do you want me to go to? He said, no, I'll take you. And he got off out of surgery. We got into his car, went to a hospital. Honestly, he took me. We walked into the hospital. Now, the guy that does the scans is the heart surgeon. We walked straight into the heart surgeon's office. He went, told him what was wrong. He went, yes, yes, take him downstairs, get a scan on him, do an X-ray, do these blood tests. We went and did that, came back up. The heart surgeon then laid me down, did an ECG on me. And after 20 minutes, he went, okay, he said, you haven't got a blood clot. He said, you've got nothing wrong with your circulation. You know, everything's all right with your heart. It's not that. So the doctor went, well, it must be something, George. Let's go and see the orthopedic surgeon. He walks into this guy's office, consultant's office. This guy says, George, he said, I want you to go and have a CT scan. Now, get this, Peter. Unfortunately, all the machines are in operation. It's going to be at least 20 minutes. Would you mind going and having a cup of tea?
Oh, no. No wonder your son didn't believe this.
I went and had a cup of tea. Comes back. He says, okay. He said, it could be an infection. You might need a partial knee replacement. He said, but we'll take that fluid off the knee. When we analyse that, we'll know. Goes through, shows me this model. This is what a partial knee replacement looks like. He says, right, the fluid needs taken off the knee. I said, you know, when do I come back for that? No, pop into A&E. I'll come and do it now. We'll send some away for cultures. He takes the fluid off my knee, gives me this medication. And he said, come back and see me when the results are going to be about 4 days' time. I'd walked into the doctor's at 10 o'clock in the morning, Peter, and I was walking out the hospital with all this done at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in 4 hours.
How much?
4 hours.
How much, though?
Oh, how much?
Yeah.
It cost me, I think, about... let me tell you, we're in a healthcare scheme called SGK, which is our NHS equivalent. So we pay £50 a month for each of us. That's our biggest outlay here. £50 for me, £50 for the wife to be in the healthcare scheme. If we go to a government hospital and there's one just down the road from us, everything is free. All that would have been free of charge. If we go to a private hospital, we pay 10% of what the bill would have been. The health insurance pays 90%. So I paid the doctor, I think, £20 for doing all that and running me there. The taxi would have been more, if I'm honest with you. And I paid the two specialists in the hospital about £35,
what?
I think, for all that and for the scans and for the x-rays.
That's a hell of a story, George. A hell of a story. Listen, to finish off, because we're going to talk again. We're going to bring you back again one day. What's your message from Turkey, who's somebody who lives there with your missus, to the tourists who would love to come back but are too scared?
It would be really, first of all, I understand your concerns. I really do understand your concerns. But, you know, look at, you can never say never. As I said earlier, Pete, there's not been an incident. Look down at Fethiye, Chalish, Oladeniz. the only people who've been killed in 50 years here are people who've been unfortunately involved in a tragic accident in a, you know, on a quad bike or something, you know, something of that nature. There's no terrorism here. I also understand people's natural reluctance. I don't know, have you been to Turkey, Pete?
Yes, I have indeed. I thought Istanbul was one of the most fascinating cities I've ever seen. I thought the Galapagos Bridge, is that the bridge, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
We went over to the peninsula as guests of Major Bayramoglu. And he gave me, I've always wanted to tell the story, he really took to me. And he said, I was with travel agents, and he said, I want you to have this with his interpreter. I want you to have this to eat, a lobster to eat on the plane going home. So everybody was there. I took this package, and they were all getting into their packed whatever it was on this plane. And I got the lobster, opened it, and it was still alive. And I threw it in the gangway, and the plane tipped up. I'll never forget. And that was 100 years ago. So, yes, I've been to Turkey, in answer to your question.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, once again, I can understand people like myself, if you have a natural reluctance to come here, come and have a week down here. You know, Chalish Beach. Remember that name, Chalish Beach. It's near to Fethiye. It's beautiful.
George in Turkey, thank you for talking to me.
Thank you, Peter.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 2.